Hello and welcome to the Fellowship Phase, an Adventures in Middle-earth podcast. I'm Josh and that's Callum. We're going to give you inside information on how to find your own path through Tolkien's world.
Not far from the mouth of the Forest River was a strange town he heard the elves speak of in the king's cellars. It was not built on the shore, though there were a few huts and buildings there, but right out on the surface of the lake. Protected from the swirl of the entering river by a promontory of rock which formed a calm bay. A great bridge made of wood ran out to where on huge piles made of forest trees was built a busy wooden town. Not a town of elves, but of men, who still dared to dwell here, under the shadow of the distant Dragon Mountain. They still strove on the trade that came up the great river from the south, and was carted past the falls to their town. But in the great days of old, when Dale in the north was rich and prosperous, they had been wealthy and powerful, and there had been fleets of boats on the water, and some were filled with gold, some with warriors and armor. There had been wars and deeds, which were now only a legend.
Hello, James and Callum.
Hello, Callum and Josh.
Hello, Josh.
No, I don't like that.
did not work. Not into it whatsoever.
It's quite upsetting, actually.
Joms.
That's better.
Let's go for Joms.
That's my next name for a campaign.
Josh, your narrative introduction leads us to talk about
Josh Joms.
Josh Joms.
I really want to seize control and just move past this to talk about Escaroth. That's the subject of our episode today. How to prepare and to run a game in the town on the lake. James is here as an expert. What are you an expert in? You've lived on a lake?
Science fiction.
it's a town on a lake, science fiction.
Nope.
For the record, for our readers, James actually is an expert in science fiction, more so than we're experts in Tolkien. But whether it'll be useful on this adventure to Escaroth, I don't know.
No.
Is it science fact?
I have some interesting I did do a little bit of research and I have some interesting details that we might get into.
Good.
Looking forward to it.
Now, Callum, I'm right in thinking that Lake Town was not only our first experience in Adventures Middle Earth, it was the first place that you ran as a lore master, because our first adventure started there.
Well, yes, although actually it was conveniently, we were like, you've just left Lake Town. And that's pretty much all the mention it got. I think I described the bridge and that was pretty much, you could look back and you'd say, just been there. Looking back on that now, very unclear why any of you had been there. But, you know, so we didn't touch on it and we came back to being with the party in Lake Town much later on in the campaign.
Yes. Yes, I actually think it was probably from a pre-written adventure, a nice gentle introduction. If you'd been pointed 180 degrees the other way, it's redundant to say both those things, I realise. If you'd been pointed 180 degrees and the adventure just went straight into Lake Town as a new lore master, that would have been a lot, because there is a lot going on there.
I still find running, I know we've done an excellent episode on how to prepare a city, but I still find that a bit daunting because I think it's that difficult balance of allowing the player's freedom to go around the city or town, and also like they make it feel bustling and alive and busy with loads of NPCs without like just overwhelming them with stuff and keeping them on point is quite difficult. And I think particularly Lake Town, and we're going to talk about Dale in a little bit, because I don't know, I feel like maybe, and we've not run this yet, but maybe like somewhere like Minas Tirith, because we have a better description of it and a better understanding of it from the lore, I actually think that might be easier to run. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but yeah, I thought we could maybe touch a little bit about the history and the and what we know, what did Tolkien write about Lake Town, what's mentioned in the books. Then we can talk a little bit about some of the places that you could prep and run, most of them from the official book, but maybe some other places that we've visited or come up with, some of the people that you might meet there, and then finally some sort of quest hooks. And then what everyone's been looking forward to since the very first episode of the podcast, maybe we'll just look a little bit deeper into where the name came from, but you'll need to wait and see.
I'm excited for this in particular. So we're going to save that for last as the treat at the end. Good. Yeah. I'm excited. Okay. What do we know about Lake Town in terms of canon Middle-earth lore?
Well, when I was doing a bit of reading up in preparation for this, I was reading the passage that Callum read out at the start of the episode. And the thing that I realized that I always forget, or that maybe never even really, never really even fully processed, is that Lake Town actually predates the arrival of Smaug and the destruction of Dale, that there was an older, more prosperous Lake Town on the same site as the current Lake Town. It has sort of shrunk and is actually a sort of rundown version. And that is to say, that is the one we know from The Hobbit, which of course is destroyed in The Hobbit.
Yes.
Third Lake Town in the time of Adventures of Middle-earth, we're on Lake Town V3.
Yes, which is not on the same site as the first two Lake Towns, but is further up north, which is mentioned at some point in one of the books. I think it might be mentioned on the very last page of The Hobbit. Where Gandalf and Balin give Bilbo a bit of an update on how things have been going in Wilderland since he went home.
Now, in classic fantasy style, new settlements often have a particular vibe that sets them apart. Lake Town physically is very different. It is a town built out on stilts in the water, gives it a particular flavour. It also is quite different from a lot of the other places that we experience, certainly in The Hobbit up to that point. It's very populated. It also feels a much more grounded in things like trade. It's less kind of idyllic in the way that the Shire is, or fantastical in the way that Rivendell is, less lonely than Bjorn in his house. It's an actual town. It's one of the few times that money is mentioned. There's a lot of chat about money and the master of Lake Town. It also is where the plot of The Hobbit kind of accelerates towards the denouement, that it goes from being this kind of episodic, see all these different things in Middle-earth, to, oh, the dragon, this is our central tension for the remainder of the book. So what things should a player know about Lake Town if they're going to rep it? What are the key parts about it for a lore master?
Okay, well, I guess like big picture, before we speak maybe a bit more about the history and what we know, or rather what we don't know, because we don't know that much, is we know this is a place of trade, and it sort of sits at a bit of a center point between the woodland realm, so the elves, and then Erebor, the dwarfs, and potentially places like Dorwinion, which is a town that's spoke about, which is the south and the east. And, you know, there's certainly discussion about, you know, this Lake Town area. I imagine it's a bit like Venice. You know, if you think about Venice,
yes,
it's a maritime place. It's defensively, it's getting that from being on the water, being subordinate still. So, you know, there's a lot of similarities with how Venice was in that time as a sort of trading empire. Water is very important. So to me, that makes me think, okay, there's going to be mixing of cultures and people. There's going to be a lot of visitors, there's a lot of commerce, and there's a lot of opportunities there for when you're running games about coming up with interesting adventure hooks, coming up with interesting characters that are visiting. And you can really, I think it's probably a good place to start a game, because it's a good explanation for, particularly if your players have chosen a diverse group of individuals, where would they all be? Well, Lake Town makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It has that you start in a tavern vibe, just on a bigger scale. A place where feasibly lots of different types of people could be and is a bit of a melting pot. I like the Venice analogy. Does that mean that the master is the equivalent to the Doge, which was always one of my favorite historical noble titles? The master's the Doge of Venice.
Well, it is an elected position. So in that sense, Lake Town operates more like a democracy or a republic, like on a small scale, than a monarchy or a, I don't know, yeah, more authoritarian. Authoritarian is the wrong word, especially when you're talking about Tolkien, because he likes kings who are not authoritarian.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we might go into Tolkien's politics a little bit when we're talking about Dale, because there's some fun stuff to think about there. But yes, it's interesting that, like the mayorship of Hobbiton, the master of Lake Town is this sort of local elected position.
Mm.
So we've got different cultures coming together, mostly fixated on trade and money. Its place is central to the region. Would this mean, therefore, that we could have all the different cultures and callings feasibly could be visiting or from Lake Town, really, couldn't they, for AIM?
Well, a couple of thoughts on that, which is, obviously, AIM is by default set, is it 5 years after The Hobbit?
Yeah, it's 2945.
So it is this interesting period of, with the arrival, or the return, I should say, of the dwarves, the re-establishment of Dale, and Lake Town as the central channel through which all this new trade is coming in, it makes sense that that people would want to come and check this out. Maybe even folk from Gondor who have heard about this. That's enough time for news to travel south and people to go, oh, you know, this land, this area, this region, maybe we'll talk more about this in future episodes, but used to be in communication with Gondor, you know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe there is a chance for a renewed connection, trade-wise, diplomatically, and so on. So I think, yeah, exactly as you have both been saying, there was good reason why pretty much anyone might be there. Hobbits are tricky. Hobbits are always tricky, but anyone else, you can justify it. You can justify it, obviously. But those are my thoughts.
Yeah, and I think that, like, as you know, everyone will know about the dragon. You know, it's a pretty big deal, and the fact that the dragon's been killed is a really big deal. So, you know, I imagine it wouldn't be hard for as a player to come up with a reason why your character would be interested. Maybe they are intrigued. You know, the Bard is putting out a call for people to come to Dale to help. It's a lot of opportunities for people to travel from all parts of Middle Earth. And yeah, so I think there's a lot going for Lake Town as a place to start. What do we know about Lake Town that Tolkien writes? What's the sort of lore aspect of it? I don't think there's a huge amount, is there?
There's not a huge amount, I don't think. One thing I would say is I think there's something that is very interesting about Lake Town and Dale together, which is that everyone who is an adult at the time of the beginning of the standard year, beginning of AIM, would have lived through the destruction of the second Lake Town by Smaug and potentially the Battle of the Five Armies, which is something I thought about when I was creating Torwald, which actually came back into the game relatively recently. And gave Torwald a distinct perspective on some of the events that occurred more recently in the game.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to think about how everyone lived through that, what kind of impression that made on them, and the choice, did they stay in Lake Town or did they go with Bard to help refound Dale? Those are everyone in that area who is of Lake Town, the second Lake Town originally, has been through those experiences and made that choice. And that's inherently interesting to me. It also, there's an element of maybe some Blitz spirit that you could think about in terms of, I mean, obviously Tolkien wrote it before the Blitz happened, but nevertheless, in terms of our reference points. There is this a way that people are shown in The Hobbit as coming together, and the fact that Thranduil goes and helps them is always a moment that is fascinating to me. Thranduil changes. He was going to march straight to Erebor when he heard the dragon was dead, but he hears about the plight of the refugees, essentially what they are at that point, from Lake Town, and he goes and helps provide food and, you know, other necessary support. And that's also very interesting to think about in terms of the relationships between the different groups that are all coming out of this key moment that is very sort of dramatic for a number of reasons, not just because of the Battle of the Five Armies and Smaug, but because of the relationships between the different groups.
It's interesting thinking, and I've not really thought about this before, but thinking about Third Age as the like the ending of the importance of elves in Middle-earth and the moving towards it being the age of men, and similarly dwarves becoming never really the main protagonists, but, you know, becoming of less importance as we move into the Fourth Age of Middle-earth. Because I guess Dale is a city that is of the, you know, the, its existence really is related to the dwarves settling Erebor. So it had no importance before that. It didn't exist. It became a town of men because there was dwarves nearby and there was trade, and you know the dwarves had things that the men wanted. And in the same way, I guess that Lake Town is positioned where it is, I presume, because of its proximity to the Woodland Realm. And so it's almost like saying these two towns, their importance is related to these other peoples. And that is kind of like, you know, men have come behind. It'd be interesting to think about how that develops afterwards. You know, after the dwarves become less important, are they still going to be key places? So it's kind of like the way that that's positioned, where obviously Minas Tirith has got nothing to do with dwarves now. So it's a much more connected...
Cosmopolitan.
It's definite. There's a real opportunity. I think the only other thing that I know about in the lore, so obviously there's the descriptions in The Hobbit where we hear about Lake Town, they visit, they speak to the masters, they speak to the peoples. We hear a little bit about the history of that, but we don't even know when Lake Town was founded. You know, we know it's existing, it's old, but we don't know anything about when and why they came to live on the lake before the dragon was there. And you can theorize, I guess. And then we hear a little bit more about what's happening in the north in the appendices of Lord of the Rings, where they talk about during the War of the Ring and the Easterlings invade, and there's a battle outside of Dale and Erebor. We don't hear anything about Lake Town in that. So yeah, it's really limited. Do we know anything else about it?
Well, I just want to circle back to something you said, Callum, which is the relationship with Mirkwood elves. And the reason why it is where it is, and this is something we do know from The Hobbit, is the Mirkwood elves love Darwinian wine.
Yes.
So there is. So it's not sort of just this sort of abstract, oh, there's lots of trade happening. It's, as we've been saying, very specifically at this intersection between these different groups, these different regions, and that is something we actually see. We see these trade systems being that are sort of worked in to the story of The Hobbit. The wine goes up river. Maybe we should not get into how upriver travel works, Callum. Because and then the barrels get sent back down. So we get a little glimpse, and something that I think comes from Tolkien's own understanding, knowledge of pre-industrial societies, that because of his own work, his own studies, that we get, even in a very simplistic, you know, for a children's book way, the trade and an economy is important. So it's one of those like fundamental things that just Tolkien was good at doing.
Which is interesting because it's such an important part of Lake Town. But as we've talked about on this podcast many times, that I think the themes that Adventures of Middle-earth shines in aren't those, and it's more about, you know, fellowship, you know the struggles with what is right and what is wrong, and, you know, it's not like earning money, mm-hmm. or you know, that's not like a primary theme that you see. So then it's sort of like, okay, so this is a city that, or a town, that's all about commerce. As we talked about in the last episode where we talked about money, you know, suddenly we're like, oh yeah, money, we didn't really think about it that much. And now it's like, oh, and here's this place where we don't really know anything about the details of the commercial system and how money worked in Middle-earth, really. And it's not something that's valued by our heroes in the stories that we know of. But maybe if you wanted to run that sort of game, this is where you should do it. Could be interesting.
Yeah, you could have a campaign structured around trying to set up the trade links with the Vale of Anduin, which is a thing that is in some of the books.
Yeah,
that, you know, the Old Forest Road project.
Yes, so great. Love that on the map.
So I think you could do almost like a West Marches type game.
Based game.
That's like the East Ravanian Trading Company.
Oh, no.
Sorry. Sorry.
Not a good reference. No.
It's suddenly become very problematic.
Bad example. Money. But
if money is not that important in your game, which it's not particularly important in our game, and I don't think, as we've said many times, the setting really suits that. What kind of adventures does Lake Town lend itself to then? So if you're lore mastering, what kind of quest hooks are we talking about? What sort of things would people get up to in Lake Town? We've accepted that it's a place where there could be loads of different types of people. Great. What are the opportunities?
The Dragontide Festival.
Dragontide Festival. Was that something that was in the module, Callum, or something that you created?
That is something that's in the module. So the places you can get information about Lake Town, the Lore Master's Guide has got a section, and it actually describes Lake Town in quite a lot of detail. So page 28 onwards, there's a lot of stuff in there. And one of the things that's in there is undertakings for Lake Town. And one of those is Dragontide Festival, I believe. Maybe it's not in there. Where is it? So I think it's one of these like little adventure seeds that they put in.
I am looking through it now, and if it's here, you sent me the lore on Dale and Lake Town that Torwood would know. And if it is here, it is one of the sections you have blanked out. So I can't help you.
Redacted. Ooh, secret festival planning.
Oh, it's in. So there's two other books that touch on Lake Town. So one is called Erebor Adventures, which is a pre-written module, which takes you through some stuff that happens in Dale. Really, quite a good. Like, if I was going to run any of them, I might run this one. It's got some really interesting quests. But the fifth module in that is that there's the annual festival of Dragontide. But there is a whole lot of intrigue that happens during that. So that's where Dragontide comes from. So it was a pre-written thing. And I guess Dragontide is an annual festival to celebrate the defeat of the dragon by Bard. And in the module, I think, I'm just finding the reference to it now. It's got a mention of an inn that you go to. You have to find something that's gone missing for Dragontide. And I think the Dragontide itself, there's a competition to do with archery.
Yeah.
Yes. And then
we ran that in our game because we arrived at Lake Town, I think, on the eve of the Dragontide, and our players took part in the festivities, which it always, I think, in any role-playing game, the festivals are great because you can often use game mechanics in quite a safe environment. So we did a series of challenges, which included competitive swimming. And then the kind of conclusion of it all was a great sort of paper dragon kite was flown over the town, and people could compete as archers to bring it down. And actually Halmir, who I was playing at the time, was the person to do so. And it was a big character moment for him. And that was quite an exciting way to kind of like get the history of Lake Town, the forefront of the game, and actually have what was effectively a combat encounter, but in a sanctuary.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you find the festival? Did you think it was...
I think it was a memorable session. I think there was a delightful level of chaos, which, as yep. Josh suggests, didn't feel too high stakes. Cam, you know how I feel about when there's chaos and there's high stakes. So yeah, I remember it fondly. I remember Halmir shooting down the paper dragon as a sort of standout moment for him relatively early on in his time with the party. And I remember that you said to us, what games might the characters propose for the festival, which is how the competitive swimming came about, because that was Halmir's proposal as a man of...
Dol Amroth.
Dol Amroth, thank you. That was something he was bringing, that Scott, Carhu proposed a wrestling competition. And what was the other one?
On the boat. It was, you had to swim to a boat and then you had to wrestle people off boats or something.
Right. Yeah. We linked it all together. There was a swimming, you swam to the boats, you rowed the boats, and then you wrestled the boats. And of course, inevitably, Carhu won that. But yeah, so it was just a space for some cooperative play, essentially, that was not too mired in, you know, the threat of death as such.
And then our success at Dragon Tide, I think, then led us into a sort of role play with the master and other kind of important people in the town, where there was a bit of kind of quest giving and context for the area. Because one of the stories that we had around that time was that there was kind of some criminality, bandits, which seemed to link into a broader plot for us. So there was a kind of a sort of detective subplot to try and find out a bit more about that.
Did we talk about the thinking board? No, we should save that for another episode.
Thinking board
deserves a whole episode of itself.
So I think maybe now it's worth just talking through a little bit about Lake Town, like the different areas and the places, because that might give you an idea of what I think. Often I find descriptions of areas and places immediately give me idea for quests. So we know where it is. It's on Lake Town. There's a big bridge going into town. So as soon as you arrive, there is a gatehouse if you're arriving by land. But I imagine a lot of people will be arriving by boat, which is also guarded into the docks. And there is a lovely, lovely map in the Lore Master's Guide, which is a nice drawing, and it's numbered and labeled. You guys have seen this map. I don't know if you remember it.
I have it in front of me.
You have it in front of you. Josh doesn't have it in front of you.
I actually have both that map and the original map of the original Lake Town in front of me.
That's a proper research right there.
Aaron Wynn Fonstad's Atlas of Middle Earth, which I dug out. I say dug out, it's proudly displayed on the bookshelf in my living room. But the reason I mention it is because if you compare the two maps, the Lake Town V2 is a lot smaller than the one in the region guides. Is it the region guide, Cal? The Lore Master's Guide.
Lore Master's Guide, yes. Lore Master's Guide. All Lake One stuff is in the Lore Master's Guide.
Right, because it's the default starting point. So it's interesting to compare, at least interesting for me, to compare the two and sort of give context for how much more of a bustling municipality the new Lake Town 3.0 is.
So what kind of places would people find in Lake Town 3.0?
So there's various districts. They split it up into, when you first arrive, you go straight into the gatehouse and bridge defences. And it looks quite intimidating, like palisade walls, a tall gatehouse. And I imagine, you know, potentially, as many societies in this time, that cities were a place of defense and safety in times of war. So that would be a primary function. James?
I put my hand up because I did actually, I was waiting for this to come around and be relevant, and now it is. So from the Atlas, is it okay if I just read out a little section?
Yeah, fire away.
Although all of the cities Tolkien described, and many of the smaller towns as well, had some physical barrier, being walled and or constructed on hills or underground, only Lake Town employed water as its protection against evil. Using the great forest trees of Mirkwood, gigantic pilings sunk far into the bottom of the long lake supported a platform on which were erected the warehouses, shops, and dwellings of the lake men. So I think it speaks to that sense, that sort of early Middle Ages, what medieval historians dislike people calling the Dark Ages, but those kind of sensibilities of the world is dangerous out there. You know, there are circles of light, circles of civilization where people can be safe, but that needs to be ensured with these kinds of defenses. And that, so yes, it makes sense that the entrance would be this sort of intimidating place. I remember, I think when our party arrived, we arrived after dark, and there was some, I can't remember exactly what happened now. I think we essentially agreed to go and camp on the shore until morning, basically. But that was just like, yeah, even after the rebuilding of Dale, even after the return of the King in the North.
King in the North.
Thank you.
King in the North.
There we go. That there, it's still, there's still peril out there. Mirkwood is still not safe. The other detail I just thought was interesting there is the fact that, yes, Lake Town is built using the trees of Mirkwood. So there's that connection to the wider environment as well.
You're not sure how the elves feel about that?
I think I know how the elves feel about that.
Okay, I am sure I know how. So as well as the sort of guard area, the other districts that are described are the Merchant's District, makes sense, the Artisan's District, the Elven Quarter, the Residential District, Shipyards District, and Town Hall Quarter. And then within all the districts, there's various buildings of import that are laid out, which we talked about in Preparing City, about how if you want players to do the thing that you've prepped, and then signpost them to them. So that's quite a nice thing.
Absolutely. About the map.
So they've got a couple of interesting locations, and some of these will have plot hooks associated. So there's the Bowman's Guild Hall, Bridge Street, Butcher's Quay, Butcher's Quay, the jail.
That's right, Matt Mercer of you.
The gatehouse, the Glittering Gate, granaries and warehouses, guard barracks, hospital, the market pool, the market square, the merchant's guild hall, the river trade toll house, the street of Boyers and Fletchers, the toll house, town hall, town watch barracks, and the Watergate.
The writers haven't really narrowed, like we talked about prepping a city, narrow down the locations to key places. I don't know if the writers have really narrowed it down that much there. You listed at least a dozen different places, all of which could be interesting and viable as destinations. But
and
basically,
all the descriptions and information and people there. So actually, there's a lot here. We've not explored all this in our game.
We've not at all. That is very thorough, and I suppose lends itself to a whole manner of quests and adventures. That actually, it's a large enough town sanctuary to have adventures on that locale. It's not just a place that you sleep, it's a place that you could actually interact for quite a long period of time.
Sorry, I'm laughing because we had an adventure, if you remember, Josh. We had an adventure in Lake Town.
Yes, we did an adventure.
Which involved tracking down some of these criminal elements mentioned earlier. First, luring them out of hiding by sending Kahu out alone, pretending to be drunk.
Yeah. Oh, I remember. Yeah.
Which triggered a trap that sent him plunging into, I don't remember what it's called, but I think of it as the Undercity.
Yeah, there's a name for ashes. That's what my background on this call is. The
right.
It's actually an Erebor Adventures book. There's a whole quest that revolves around this area underneath. Because I think that's quite an interesting way of thinking about Lake Town, is that obviously it's built on all these stilts. What's underneath the city? Well, the Undercity.
What, which is a very would be a very self-explanatory name, Under City, which just tells you exactly what is going on there. It's not, you know, mysterious at all, like the name Lake Town is.
Yeah, yeah. I think they call it Lake Town Down Under, which just makes me think is a
strange. Never do. No, I don't believe that's what's called.
It makes me think that there are kangaroos down there, is what it makes me think.
Yeah.
Lake Town Down Under.
Yeah.
It sounds like a spin-off series.
They turned down on it.
Let's not do any Australian accents, guys.
Yeah, let's not do that. So yeah, there's the in Erebor Adventures they talk about it there, and there's this mysterious goings on, and there's these mud men that have been around. So people that have been seen around in various settings, and they've been covering themselves in mud as a sort of disguise. Who are they? What are their intentions? Or what are they up to? Who knows? And the other rumor that's going on is that there is a beast or monster of some sort that is been reported to have been seen in that part of town down below, down under, called the Gutter Maw. And there's various rumors about that.
The Katoa.
Yes. And if you're a real talking nerd, you probably know what that is. But that's all I'm going to say about it.
I actually don't know if I do know what it is, nor do I want to, because we've not encountered it yet in our game. I really like the introduction of the Guttermore as a rumor, because it felt like it immediately meant that the Down Under, as we're apparently now calling it, was a place of threat compared to above. That you straight away knew, oh, there might be a monster down here. If we're exploring, doing quests down here, it's very different from popping to the local tavern. I like that juxtaposition. And there's so much to do here.
It reminds me slightly of an underpass of a motorway.
Yes.
There's something creepy about that.
Yes, agreed.
Like living in Glasgow and walking home at night underneath the motorway. It wasn't like a place that had a good reputation. And I think that's kind of, I don't know, darkness, and you know, it's not got the purpose. You know, it's the purpose of it is to support something else. So those sort of places can become quite sinister in a way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like that functional part of a city which is not really there to be explored. You know, it almost feels like you're not meant to be there.
Yeah, you don't have good cause to be there, which suggests if you are there, you're up to something.
Mm.
As indeed. Hang on, I have their names somewhere here. Jonar, Burn, and Rainy? Is that right?
They might be heroes in your game. Who knows if you meet these people?
Sorry if I've spoiled a massive twist.
Don't think they were ever very hidden as criminals.
But who we tricked into attempting to drown Kahu, I guess was the plan, or drop him down into the under city, yeah. Down under. Anyway, the reason I was laughing earlier is because what happened is Bert, who was playing the dwarf Durnir at the time, decided to take the yes, you remember now, Josh, decided to take the fast way down into down under and just jumped into the water. But he was wearing heavy armor.
And he just got stuck on the bottom, didn't he?
He got stuck on the bottom. But what was funny is, and this is one of those like, oh, right, what are the rules for drowning again moments? But because he had such a high constitution, we realized that he could stay under the water for like 10 minutes or some absurd length of time.
Yeah. That's actually, just as an aside, if you're preparing Lake Town, there are various mechanics that it's worth prepping, including how swimming works, how boating works. And as an aside of that, there are some cultural virtues that give you a benefit if you're around Lake Town and water. So it's worth having a look at those. But also how breathing underwater works, because much like jumping and running jumping, there are rules No one knows them off the top of your head. And when you read them, they don't always make logical sense.
Indeed. I mean, so Donis spent the whole fight.
Yeah, just underwater.
Just literally, because I think we had established that we didn't think it made sense. I don't think this is actually in the rules, but we had established as a group that we didn't think it made sense to be able to be wearing heavy armor and swim. And so he spent the entire combat encounter walking along the bottom of the lake to a point where he could start climbing up one of the wooden piles.
It was like, you can certainly try. And then, yeah, I just thinking off the top of my head there, how would I do the underwater breathing thing in the future? You know, what's a normal amount of time to be able to hold your breath underwater for a normal person? A couple of minutes? So why don't you just say whatever your constitution modifier is, that's how long you can breathe underwater? Because then if your constitution 20,
modifier,
your breath for 5 minutes, that's a long time.
Well, with a minute.
It's a long time, but not impossible. Like, human beings can do that.
I think the rule has written bits in the fifth edition Dungeon Master's Guide are a bit bonkers.
I'm not going to go look for those. But your constitution modifier with a minimum of 1 minute, I would suggest.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right, there we go. You put it here. Now we've sorted that.
Because otherwise it's a real glass situation for people who've seen that movie.
I haven't, and I'm now fascinated. Does it involve a dwarf walking along the bottom of a lake?
No, it involves someone drowning very quickly in a very shallow puddle of water.
Oh, that's much darker than the flippant way I put it. Right, so we have sorted out breathing underwater. That's a success for the podcast, I'd say. We also need to sort out the name of this destination. Now, wanted to save that to the end. Is there anything else to talk about first?
Yes.
Yeah, we want to talk about some of the places and some of the people that are there.
We have that, and then I have a thing.
Okay. But should we talk about some of those places in a bit more? So I listened through a lot of places there, and we've delved into Down Under, which should go visit. But some of those a little bit more detail, because we did visit some of them, not all of them. I'm not going to go through every single one. Was there any places that you specifically remember visiting?
What about visiting the master in the town hall? Visiting the leader of a place is often a key part of adventuring. So what would that look like for a party visiting?
Yeah, so I think it is difficult because we don't know anything. All we know is from the last page of The Hobbit that the old master of Lake Town was given a load of money by Dale to go and, you know, help after the dragon had died, and he took the money and left and went to the Wastes, which are the sort of north of Dale towards the Grey Mountains, and died. So, and then there's a new master who's apparently much better.
And all that people say about the fate of the old master is that a tree was seen nearby, but then it wasn't there later, was it, Josh?
No, right. I don't know if we even talked about it in this podcast, and this is too long a story to go into. But for context, Halmir is afraid of walking trees.
It's one of the moments that happened, and they've just mocked him about it.
I don't think they exist.
Well, we'll need to do an episode on that at some point.
I'm not getting drawn into this argument here. I know what I saw.
So I guess if you visit the master of Lake Town, you've really got free rein to do what you want with it. I looked back on bits, so I'm like, I'm not sure I got that right. I found it hard to, like, it wasn't something that immediately captured my imagination. And I actually wonder if sometimes I think the best leaders or like these powerful figures is best just being like, oh, the master has, you know, like, leave it mysterious. Maybe you don't actually need your player characters to meet the master. It's all delegated, it's all messages, it's all announcements. You never actually interact with them.
Or you could read more Terry Pratchett and take inspiration from the portrayal of the patrician.
Yes. Okay. Yes. As an aside to our readers, our listeners, James and I are on a mission to get Callum to read more Discworld.
Yes. Ankh-Morpork, the greatest fictional democracy, where there is one man and one vote. The patrician is the man and he has the vote.
He's a brilliant character.
But what is interesting about him, and I was making a joke, but what is interesting about him in relation to this is that he's portrayed as, yes, he is a benevolent tyrant, but he is primarily, he delegates in very interesting ways, and also controls the city by sort of manipulating the different groups within it, giving them what they want, but then also finding a counter power center to whatever that group is. So it's all kind of like this circus, as it were, that he is managing. I guess I think of the Master of Lake Town as not obviously as an autocrat in the same way, but that he's going to be, he has all these different groups that he has to think about the impact of what happens in the town on the overall trade network. So he's got to be someone who has a head for logistics. And so that immediately, I think, separates him out from, for instance, how we might think of Bard, and we'll talk more about Bard in the episode on Dale, on Presumes, but that they are probably coming at things from quite a different perspective in that way, I would have thought. Anyway, I thought you did a good job with him. I he seemed like a serious man who had serious things on his mind, and yes, that he was not going to be entertained by adventuring party nonsense, that he respected us and what we could do, but that he was fundamentally someone who had a lot of spinning plates, and we were just one part of that. And I think that impression came across.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. Maybe I'm now thinking the reason I didn't think it went that well was because I tend towards the more chaotic end of role. That's the characters I enjoy. So for me, it wasn't like, oh wow, the Master of the, it didn't fill me with really much excitement to play that role, because I think that is right, like that's the sort of person it was. And my notes for him, I gave him the name Orpher. He was a merchant.
You chose the name.
I chose the name. There was nothing written.
I didn't know that.
It
just made sense to me. Author, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and his voice was steady. He had an English accent. He was firm and he spoke few words. That's all I've written down.
Let's hear your English accent, Callum. Say something English.
I don't know. I don't want to do that.
Okay. That was mean. I'm sorry.
I don't even remember what it was. I think I'm not sure I even did that. Yeah, so I guess you've got the Master as an important people. There's some other people around. There was Erland, Captain of the Watch. Speaks erratically but sensibly. Cast Nicolas Cage. Is
that... that was in your head.
There was, who are other interesting people? Magni Twice Sunk, who was a merchant who...
Oh, yeah. In
the town council. But what as name? It soberly implies, twice he's lost a boat and all of its goods to misfortune.
Should we like, set him up on, like, a friend date with that...
Oh, Falco Thrice-Fallen.
Yes.
Yeah.
They can relate to each other.
There's some other NPCs that come up in some of the adventures. There's Oddvar, Deacon of the Merchants Guild. I think there was a James built NPC, Valbrand, son of Valdemar.
Yes. You asked me to come up with some people that Torvald would know in Lake Town and Dale. And I mostly did Lake Town, but I thought that he would have a couple of people he knew from Lake Town. I thought he'd have someone who maybe he had grown up with, who might have decided to stay in Lake Town, and while he went with his family to Dale. And I thought he might, I was thinking, why was he in Lake Town at the start of the campaign? So I invented the character of Valbrand, son of Valdemar, who I thought, I think I read somewhere, I can't remember where, it might have been in the bit of the Lore Master's Guide said to me of like books being in, or we decided that it made sense that in Lake Town, books would be in the private collections of merchants. So I thought I would invent a slightly sleazy merchant who Torvald would have to deal with to get, it would have had to deal with to get hold of books for the Royal Library of Dale. More on that later.
I think the whole thing about trade, as it means that there probably is, there's people that will benefit from that arrangement, and there'll be people that will be less fortunate with it. And so having characters and NPCs there that are related to trade makes sense. There's also, you know, a variety of artisans and metal workers that are going on there. So one person that in the book suggests is Glowin, is a sort of emissary of the dwarves to the men. So he's sometimes based there in the sort of Glittering Gate, which is the dwarven sector. There's some dwarven guards there, and then there's some elves in the Elven District. And it kind of like immediately gets you thinking, like, okay, so who, what sort of dwarf would live with men? What sort of elves would live with men? You know, like, who are these people? Why are they there? And you can immediately get some good ideas, I think. The one thing I'd recommend is the Airbird Adventures book, if you can get hold of it. It's got a scene in a pub, which is called the Pike and Eel, which is actually in the books, was named. I always feel like it's good to have like a good pub name or inn name. Yeah. We're going to. And in that book, there's one of the adventures, you're in Lake Town and you go to this bar and you get various rumors and it fleshes out quite a few NPCs really quickly. So that was really helpful. And then I came up with another place, which is called the Free Pigeons, which was another bar that you went to in Lake Town. Do you remember what you ate there? I actually wrote a menu.
I mean, truly pigeon. Is that too derivative?
Or was the joke was that the one thing they didn't serve was pigeon?
No, it was called the Free Pigeons, and the menu you had was roast pigeon with glazed carrot and fresh rye bread, onion soup, rich red wine.
Sounds lovely.
It's owned by Magni Toysunk.
Yeah. But that was like the slightly more dive bar type place, wasn't it? And that's the one that...
Yeah. Well, the name, do you want to know why it's called the Free Pigeons? I don't think you ever found this out.
Please tell us.
Yes.
Magni was unlucky, and three times he got shat on by a pigeon in the same spot. So to get revenge on the pigeons, he bought the spot, tore down their resting space, and built a bar there instead called Free Pigeons.
That is quite a way to solve a vendetta, isn't it?
Gives you a measure of the man.
It seems a little extreme.
Yeah. I don't know why that never came up.
Why would it?
I don't know. So those are some of the places. There was various other ones listed. So the Bowman's Guild, you know, you can imagine that there's going to be a group of archers, and that's a strong theme that comes through the book when you're making a man of Lake Town. You know, the archery is a part of it that is themed.
It's prominent amongst most of the Northmen, and of course the folk of Lake Town are amongst the various groups of Northmen who are all related to each other, which also includes the Beornings and the Woodmen, but also have links to more distantly to the Rohirrim as well, who are obviously talented horse archers. So it's a thing.
Mm. So I think that's some of the very brief couple of places and people in Lake Town that you could explore. Is there any other ones, other places that we should talk about, people want to hear about? I think most of them are pretty self-explanatory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The jail, okay, right, that makes sense, yeah, go to the jail.
I mean, I think we've talked about the master's house or the town hall. We've talked about Down Under. And it's very silly. I'm sorry.
I'm sure we did not call it that in the game.
I didn't. I'm sure it was immediately silly, and you guys would laugh at it. So I didn't bring that up.
You only want us to laugh at the things that you want us to laugh at.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think we've covered a lot. We covered the fact that it sits on away from the shore because that's safer. And on that note, I do have a thing.
That was the thing.
Okay.
Please.
Because after we are the fellowship of the thing. And so I have here John Garth's The World of J.R.R. Tolkien.
That's a gorgeous book. Cover.
It is. The places that inspired Middle Earth. So here, Garth suggests that Tolkien drew, because there is an, if you have an illustrated version of The Hobbit, you have the drawing of, of Lake Town that Tolkien himself did. Tolkien drew it exactly as the Greek historian Herodotus had described such a town in the Balkans in the 5th century BC. On platforms supported on long piles and approached from land by a single bridge. But there had also been, since the middle of the 19th century, a lot of archaeological interest in various possible lake towns in Switzerland, for example, Lake Zurich, as well as in Britain itself. For example, a lake village was discovered in Glastonbury in 1892. So this isn't just pure fantasy. This is something that Tolkien, this is something that Tolkien was drawing from, again, in his knowledge of, in this case, certainly in some cases, prehistoric settlements that were built on the shores of lakes, again, for safety. So I just thought that was really interesting.
I love that.
Yeah.
Tolkien could easily have seen an impressive model of a lake village during his Swiss holiday in 1911. So there you go.
So does that sort of answer our final question, which is why on earth is it called Lake Town?
This is what I've been waiting for all
episode. I don't think we can draw any conclusions. It's easy to make assumptions, but etymology is a
dangerous game.
I was going to say a complex science, but let's go with dangerous game. That sounds fun. So I have drawn up some theories. I don't know if either of you have any theories about why Lake Town is called Lake Town, but I have some theories.
Okay, I've been waiting for this. However many episodes in, so let's do it.
Okay.
Why is it called Lake Town, James?
Well, perhaps it was named after the descendants of two distinguished Dalish families, the Lakes and the Towns. It's possible. Now, this one, that's the most plausible explanation that I think I've been able to come up with. This one I don't like as much, especially now I've realized that Lake Town actually pre-exists the fall of Dale, which is that it's a corruption of Lacktown, signifying the loss of Dale. We can put that one. I think we can put that one aside. Okay. That one's not particularly possible. It could be a reference to the childhood upbringing of Lancelot du Lac, the famous Sir Lancelot, who was brought up by the Lady of the Lake in Arthurian myth.
Yeah.
And because he was brought up by this magical figure, he was known for, he grew up or sprung up quickly, just as Lake Town has sprung up time and time again. I don't think there's any connection between the fact that, the Lady of the Lake was involved. That, I think, is purely a coincidence. And finally, and now I really am, I think, pushing the boat out on this one, so to speak. Yeah. But here's a theory. A bold theory. That perhaps it's called Lake Town because it's on a lake and weighs a ton.
I'm not sure I can top any of those theories. So I think all I can say is thanks very much, James, for coming on. And
I was bored at an airport.
If you've got a conflicting theory, or if you have some inside information of your own which could refute or support any of those theories that have been raised by our good science fiction expert here, who we've brought in specifically for this purpose, then please email us at thefellowshipphase@gmail.com. Thanks for coming, James, and Josh, thanks for persisting.
No emails except on party business. And comments, suggestions, and questions to thefellowshipphase@gmail.com. The long year turns to its close. Much we have accomplished these last seasons. Our fellowship disbands, but is not broken, and we will return.
On the next episode of The Fellowship Phase.